to land and disencumber himself from his parasail, ran up to George. In his armor and helmet and night vision goggles, he looked more like a robot than a human being. A small robot, George thought. The warrior barely came up to his shoulder.
"You are George!"
The warrior's voice was muffled by his visored helmet. Thankful for the bioluminescent paint that had been smeared across his forehead, George said,
"That's right, mate."
The paint's luminescence was too faint to see with unaided eyes. Only those wearing the low-light-level goggles could see it.
"Find a safe place and stay there," said the warrior. "We will take care of the rest."
George gave him a grunt that might have sounded like assent, but he had no intention of keeping out of this fight. Guided by wavering pencil beams of flashlights, Gaetano's guards had rushed Kate and her sister up the main staircase and past the bedrooms on that level, and up a narrow winding staircase into a bare circular room at the top of one of the castle's turrets.
"You stay in there until we tell you it's safe to come out," one of them said.
He slammed the door and shot the bolt home. Kimberly clung to her sister.
"What's happening?" she asked. "What's going on?"
They heard gunfire.
"Rafe is a crook, Kim," Kate said. "He's a murderer and he's kidnapped Jane Scanwell. Dan must have set up this rescue attempt."
"Attempt? What if it doesn't work? What if they set the place on fire? We're locked in here."
"It'll be all right, Kim," said Kate with an assuredness she did not feel. She held her sister close and kept murmuring, "It'll be all right." Blood was running down Dan's cheek from a stone chip that had nicked him. His back tingled from other cuts. But the firing had stopped and the flashlight gone out. Total darkness and total silence. And he was still alive. Whispered voice from the top of the stairs. A couple of footsteps. Dan started to slither down the stairs as quietly as he could, trying to get away from the two men up above. He heard muttering and the metallic sounds of an empty magazine being replaced by a full one. The flashlight winked on again and caught him in its feeble glow. To Dan, it seemed like the brightest spotlight in the history of the world. A yell, and the flashlight beam went awry. Another. Somebody at the top of the stairs grunted as if he'd been hit in the gut. Then Dan heard the soft, thudding sounds of a body falling, tumbling down the stairs. It came rolling toward him, arms flailing lifelessly like a rag doll thrown away by a thoughtless child. The body hit Dan's flattened form and stopped, its sightless eyes staring at him. Before Dan could yell or move or catch his breath, he felt hands pulling at him, helping him to stand up.
"Mr. Randolph-san!"
"Hi,"
he said gratefully. "Yes." He was facing a pair of figures all in black, barely discernible in the darkness, even though they were hardly 6 inches away.
"We have control of the lower floors," the man told him in swift Japanese, "and the courtyard and outer walls. We have not yet found Mrs. Scanwell-san."
"They took her upstairs," Dan said.
"So?"
The armored figure handed something to Dan.
"These will allow you to see in the dark."
Dan bent down and placed both his useless pistols on a step, then took the goggles and slipped them over his head. He wormed them into place, blinking. Night did not turn into day, but the scene before him now looked as if he were watching it on a computer display screen. The two figures that had been barely discernible in the darkness now showed a clear but sickly green against a flickering gray background. He saw that they wore helmets and armor and had assault rifles in hand. The guns were muzzled by silencers. More robot-like figures were scurrying across the floor of the central hall to join them on the staircase. Looking up, Dan saw the slumped figure of another man, his flashlight lying beside him. The assault team leader motioned to his men and they swarmed up the stairs in swift, deadly silence. Dan started after them, but the team leader put a gauntleted hand on his shoulder.
"We will handle this," he said in Japanese. "There is no need for you to risk yourself any further."
Dan shook the man's hand off his shoulder and started up the stairs. The team leader raced up beside him.
"I'm going with you," Dan said. "Very well, then, but no heroics."
"Me?" Dan grinned. "I'm no hero." It was eerily silent at the top of the stairs. The dead man lay beside his flashlight, its beam splashing off the far wall of the long corridor. The night vision goggles somehow automatically compensated for the light. It was not so bright that it drowned out everything else. Jane's up here somewhere, Dan knew. Malik's with her, and Gaetano. The first few rooms they looked into were empty. Then they reached the end of the corridor. One of the assault team members warily pushed the door open. It must have been the master bedroom. It was large and deep, lit by a table full of fat candles off to one side, beneath a painting of the Virgin Mary and a small kneeling bench. Standing in front of the canopied bed was Jane, with Gaetano beside and partially behind her. He had a gun to her head.
"This nonsense has gone far enough. You will all drop your weapons and allow me to leave with Mrs. Scanwell."
Dan was behind the assault team leader. He saw the tableau over the smaller man's armored shoulder. Malik was in there too, a pair of gunmen flanking him. Another couple of thugs were on the other side of the room, covering the doorway with their short-barreled shotguns. Dan took it all in with a single glance. Then his eyes locked on Jane and Gaetano and the pistol he held to her head.
"The shooting's stopped," Kate said to her sister.
They had been locked in the tower room for what had seemed like hours. The chamber's only window was wider than those down below, and unbarred. Kate quickly saw why. In the moonless night she could make out a straight drop down the tower and castle wall to the rocks, hundreds of feet below. The room was absolutely bare, nothing but a floor of warped wooden boards and heavy timber beams half lost in the darkness of the high-pitched ceiling. Things fluttered and squeaked up there.
"Bats,"
said Kimberly. Kate shuddered, but Kim seemed unafraid of them.
"Is Rafe really a murderer?" she asked.
"He's a top member of the International Crime Syndicate," Kate said. "He gives the orders, and other people do the killing."
"That's what I thought," Kim said.
She leaned against the rough stone wall and slid down to a sitting position, arms wrapped around her knees. Kate sat down on the floor beside her.
"He's been using us. Both of us."
"I know," said Kim. "He likes to hurt people. Make them feel bad."
"He's been using you to control me."
Kim smiled sadly in the shadows.
"And I let him do it.
When we get out of here, if—"
Kim corrected.
"I hope he's dead before the sun comes up again."
"Maybe we'll be the dead ones."
"What was that?" Kate asked.
"What?" "I thought I heard something." "More shooting?" "No, listen."
Kim heard a grunting, puffing noise, something scraping, slithering, like a dead body being pulled across stone.
"What is it?" Kim asked.
"It's your fucking chauffeur," Big George answered from the window. "Give us a hand, will ya?"
The two women ran to the window where George was trying to lift himself past the sill. They grabbed at his back and shoulders while he pulled with both hands on the edges of the window and finally heaved himself up onto the stone sill. With more huffing and tugging, George squeezed himself through the window, barely, and tumbled to the floor.
"Christ, I thought I was going to have a fucking heart attack. Been on the moon too long to go climbing like that. That's the trouble."
"You're George Ambrose, aren't you? The one Dan calls Big George?" Kate asked.
"Friend of Dan's, right. Been trying to find a way into this bloody fortress that's not filled with blokes shooting at each other. Climbed up to the parapet and then spotted this window in the tower. None of the others looked wide enough for me."
"How did you climb it?"
Kimberly asked, her voice hushed with awe.
"It's a straight drop."
Still puffing, George grinned weakly.
"Looks straight to you. But I've climbed tougher cliffs in my day, believe me."
"We're locked in here," Kim said.
"Yes? Well, we'll see about that."
George heaved himself to his feet and marched to the door. He leaned against it. The heavy wood groaned slightly.
"Stand back a bit."
The two women backed away. George sucked in a deep breath, then kicked mightily at the door where the bolt was on the other side. It sounded like an ox hitting a stout fence at high speed.
"Is it?"
"Not yet."
George thundered against the door again. And again. On the fourth try, the latch holding the bolt against the door jamb finally pulled loose with a shriek of ancient nails ripping out of the wood. The door swung open. George, panting, bowed politely to the ladies and gestured for them to leave. Christ on a skateboard, he said as they